Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The Savage Nation. Let's have some rock and roll for all of you deadheads out there. Redheads included. Runaround Sue. Wait a minute, stop the music. I didn't ask for Runaround Sue. I asked for something about There Goes My Baby or Little Girl of Mine. What Runaround Sue? Give me Little Girl of Mine. We're talking about Elena Kagan today. I mean, they gave her pearls. They gave her makeup. They gave her a hairdo. But basically, she's never been a judge. So if you like a Banana Republic, you have one now under Obama. This has happened before in Banana Republics where they choose a relative whose last known job was working in a beauty parlor, or in this case, working at Harvard, which is about one and the same thing. You know, the real question is a world without shrimp because of the Gulf disaster. Stop it. If I were on the Judiciary Committee today, I would ask Kagan what she thinks about a world without shrimp. Because to the people from the Upper West Side, the area that she comes from, I think a world without shrimp is sort of a world without sunshine. And I don't know whether they would be willing to go to war for shrimp rights off the coast of China or shrimp rights off the coast of India. Anyhow, you don't know what I'm talking about. Here's a little story I'm going to get to today that you heard nowhere else because it came out a minute ago. 10 alleged Russian secret agents arrested in the U.S. I almost fell down. I don't know why that we would arrest Russian secret agents when we already have the equivalent in the White House. I don't understand that. How would the FBI arrest 10 alleged Russian secret agents for wanting to penetrate policymaking positions when Obama and his minions have already done that? I don't quite understand that. I mean, it gives me hope to think that there's actually a piece of the government that has not yet been compromised. Five reasons to oppose Elena Kagan's Supreme Court nomination. One, she's never been a judge. Let me start with she's never been a judge. Today, yours truly, this talk show host, Michael Savage, went to a local hardware store to buy a flag, an American flag, in a local hardware store for the July 4th weekend that's coming up, so I could proudly hang it from my balcony. Living as I do in a liberal bastion, I could not find an American flag readily. I found rainbow flags, People's Republic of China flags, assorted mockeries of American flags. So they sent me to a back room where they had some American flags hidden next to antiquated parts. And, of course, I picked up the biggest one I can get made in China. And I ran into a very nice lady who is the wife of a local judge who I happen to know. She said, "Hi, Michael, how are you?" I said, "Oh, how are you? How are you?" I said, "How's the judge doing?" And she said to me, "Oh, well, you know, he's had Alzheimer's now for a few years." And I said, "Well, I bet he still knows more about being a judge than Kagan does." And, of course, we had a laugh over that, but it's really not funny. It's unbelievable. A judge with Alzheimer's in America would know more about the courts than Kagan. You know, there's an old adage, if you put pearls on a you-know-what, it's still a you-know-what. Whatever. I can tell already everyone's on vacation. I just have an instinct for radio. This is the summertime already. Deep, deep, heavy-duty summertime blues. People are already in another world. And they really only care about two things. There's a world without pornography. If the internet were to be cut off, I would think that they'd rather go to war over a world without the internet porn or a world without shrimp. I don't think they'd go to war over anything else. The Supreme Court today ruled 5-4 that you have a right to bear arms. Again, one vote between you and absolute helplessness against the tyrannical government. And here we have a Supreme Court nomination going on, and you think that she's qualified when she's not qualified. Now, look, I'm a realist. I know Obama's a radical, and I know he would appoint a liberal to replace a liberal. That's one thing. But to replace a reasonable liberal with a reasonable liberal is one thing. But to replace a reasonable liberal with an unqualified stooge like Kagan is an embarrassment. But this is what happens when you seek the lowest common denominator. We sorted in a president, then we got Obama, and now we're seeking the lowest common denominator in judicial nominees. That's all. So let me tell you another story from the weekend. Are you listening to me on the Savage Nation? Do you know the phone number? Do you know the website? Do you know that I have ringtones available now? You didn't know about ringtones. You realize you could get a ringtone on your cell phone that answers liberalism as mental disorder? Think about how you could shake up a supermarket or a coffee shop. Instead of your phone ringing, it goes, me and my voice. Hey, you, liberalism is a mental disorder. Pick up your damn phone. You can only get it on michaelsavage.com. I'm doing it for fun. I'm going to get rich from it. I'm not going to get rich or poor from it. It's not going to change my lifestyle one iota, but it's going to shake your life up. So yesterday, this talk show host went out on his little boat, his 22-foot boat. I have a little boat and a big boat. Sometimes I don't use the big boat because it's too much trouble. Anyway, I use the little boat because it's easy. Little, you know, something small is beautiful. In most things, not all. But in some things, small is beautiful, and particularly in a boat. So it's 22 feet long with a little like cabin on it. It's a sort of mini tug. It's a fake tugboat. It has a three-cylinder Yamaha engine, 29 horsepower. It sips fuel by the pint. It seats eight people on the back with cushions. It looks like a little runabout. It's extremely seaworthy. So I, Mrs. S., and the two poodles get in the boat, and we head over about, I don't know, maybe 50 minutes away. There's a place with a dock. I'm not going to say where. Now, normally on a weekend, it's jammed. Jammed. You can't get on a dock. There's only room for like 6, 8, 10 boats, and it's usually full, as it was yesterday. So luckily, I'm a very good boater, and I found an end. It's a narrow dock, right? And it's all full on both sides, boat dock. But there's a little piece of the dock that's 2, 3 feet wide by the post that has cleats. So I put it on the side, and I was able to dock it and tie it up. And one of us goes and gets the food. The dogs are on the boat, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, there's a fat slob in a sailboat who's bothering me. He wants to edge me out of there by making me uncomfortable, by nosing his boat near me. This goes on for 30 minutes now, and I don't say anything. He's nosing up. His engine is running. His schmuck son is blowing cigarette smoke at me. And I see it's going to be trouble. Now, in my earlier days, I would have stood up and said something to him, but I knew right away it would have turned bad. But since I have learned to temper my temper, I figured, what am I going to gain by getting into a screaming fight with this fat pig right now? I'll just bide my time, and I'm going to turn my back on him, and I'm not going to respond. Meanwhile, the schmuck's hovering and motoring and engine and moving and constantly, in other words, like nosing at me and menacing me. Lo and behold, about 30 minutes of this goes by, and the missus returns with the food because you can't bring dogs in this joint. The dogs are too high class compared to the average person that sits there getting stoned and drunk on the deck. So she brings the food over. As she brings the food over, the guy next to me is going to pull out of the dock. So I said, great, I'll tell you what. I'll move in you. You'll move out there, right? And we'll rope it around. It was very friendly. And meanwhile, Mr. Fat Schmuck with the sailboat, he thinks he's going to slip into the guy who's pulling out while I'm waiting. So I say, hey, I'm going in there. You're going to go over there. And he says, no, I'm going in there. The minute I said that, an Italian guy shows up with like a cutoff. His name, I'm not going to say his name, with a gold cross. And he comes over. He says, hey, can I help you? He comes over to help me. He didn't know me now, remember, at that point. He just was a nice guy whose boat was nearby. Hey, let me help you move the boat around. I said, well, I don't know who you are, but I'm glad you showed up because there's going to be a little trouble here in a minute with that fat slob there who's going to try and edge me out. He says, Michael, don't you remember me? Anyway, I had an interchange. This guy knew this guy from somewhere before a few years ago. One of my biggest fans. He's from Bensonhurst, Brooklyn, but he lives out here. And he says to me, you want me to throw him in the water? He says, hey, guys. And all of a sudden, four more Italian guys come off the dock, heavily muscled guys with cutoffs and crosses. I mean, this is an anomaly in polite, backstabbing Marin County filled with the worst of types of humans who smile at you and put a knife in your back. You know the type of nice white guy that I'm talking about. Big smile in front and a knife in the back. Oh, wonderful people. Never an honest word comes out of their lips. But these guys are straight-up Brooklyn guys, and he starts in, hey, guys, you know who's here? This is Michael Savage. He has a big radio show, so everyone's looking. He's glowering at the guy in the sailboat. The guy in the sailboat still don't get it, that he's a minute away from losing his boat and his head. And I said, no, calm down. You don't have to do anything. And the guys, well, my mother's here from New York, and my father's here from New York, and my father-in-law, we're all Sicilians, and he used to listen to you till he died. He said, you're the only person in America who says anything like it is. It was one of those great moments that is very hard for me to translate. I'm trying to give it to you, like, in a verbal way, but it's a human thing that you can't really describe. You have to have lived through it. Now, I'm not a guy who meets people off the air. I go out of my way to be very anonymous, and I don't talk. If I raise my voice, people know me. Or if I say, Teddy, people will stop and say, is that Teddy? And are you Michael? I say, that's Teddy, but I don't know who Michael is. But in this case, I said yes, and we had a wonderful time. The long and short of it is all the boats got moved properly. The fat slob moved the sailboat quietly and meekly into the second tier. And I said, hey, guys, this is so beautiful. Bring your parents down off the... He says, Mike, I got to tell you about my mother. She's in from New York for a week. I told her we're coming across the bay in my boat to go for lunch at a certain place. She made me a meatball sandwich to bring to a restaurant because she don't like the food out here. I said, that is so beautiful. I said, I want to meet your mother. She made him a meatball hero to bring with him. I mean, the guy's a man. He's not a child. But the mother made him a meatball hero to bring to a restaurant because she knew the food would be garbage, you know. So it was that kind of thing. So we're sitting there, and he brings mom. I loved her. Brings mom over. I actually sang her a song when she showed up because my mother passed a long time ago. And I love real people more than anything on earth. When you live in a land of the phony, a real person is one of the greatest bombs that you can have. BALMS. Okay. So I have mom and dad. I said, you get on my boat. Get him on the boat. He said, oh, Mike, it'll be like you're from the Bronx. We're from Brooklyn. He says, this will be like the stoop. He said, we'll pull chairs out and we'll talk. And meanwhile, he commandeered, he took over the whole dock. Everybody, he was telling what to do and this and that, but in a nice way. So I had him on the boat. We had a couple of beers. We exchanged emails, you know, and it was that was that. And here I wake up to a world without shrimp. I'll be right back.
Savage.
So you already got the flag story in the hardware store, and you got the Vinny story from the dock. I mean, you're already ahead of the curve for listening to the show. I mean, you know, you can get politics from me, too. You'll get that. The Kagan, you know, little things like that, like an unqualified stooge from Harvard who'll be on the court for about 50 years, making your life and your children and grandchildren's lives miserable. But you already heard that. So... I mean, that's what I thought I'd tell you about the flag in the hardware store and the Vinny story. The dock was really amazing. I came home feeling, like, different. I've lived in a land of the empty phony for so long I got used to it. I mean, that's how I created the Savage Nation. I really never told you that. In other words, what motivates a man to create a virtual world on a radio show called the Savage Nation? What motivates a man to do this, and where do I get the energy to do it? It comes from living in a vacuum. It comes from living in a void of phonies. Such severe, backstabbing, fraudulent, liberal white people that you've never seen anything like the people here. Smile to your face and stab you in the back day in and day out. Empty souls, every last one of them. So when this thing happens on a dock, I've had a run-in on that dock a year or two ago. I never went back because of it. The nasty people. They see an older guy and his wife and they figure you're vulnerable. They don't know how violent my temper can be. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not Mr. Tough Guy, but you know what? Any man, when he has to stand his ground, will stand his ground. I don't care who he is. So anyway, I try to avoid incidents like this. I didn't go back, but I wanted to go back because I enjoy going up there with the getting the food with the dogs to kick. And this guy to show up out of nowhere, but I mean out of central casting. I don't just mean an acculturated Brooklyn Italian guy who's in Marin County, California, San Francisco. I'm talking about still the street tongue and really loud and really heavy duty and incredible. I tried to buy a car from a couple of years ago in a car dealer. That's where we had originally met. He reminded me. I didn't know. But his parents are such wonderful people. You know, I can't explain it. When you meet people, all social barriers drop. It doesn't mean anything. You know, remember, I have written 5 best-selling books on the New York Times bestseller list. Don't you ever forget that. You can underestimate me all you want, but believe me, millions of people don't. Just remember who you're talking to. So I don't play the highbrow number with people, although I believe me, I can do it. I just don't do it. I'd rather not. I'm very much like McChrystal in one regard. He said he'd rather get dental work than go to another dinner with a French diplomat. You know what I'm saying? And that's why I'd rather be alone with a takeout on the boat with the, you know. So that's the story. I mean, you know, it was a lot of fun for me to contact real people who willing. I mean, the guy was willing to stand up and get into a brawl for me. I didn't want him to do it. But yeah, I got to tell you one little side note about the slob on the sailboat. This guy was about 65 years old, white hair, a gut on him. The kind of ugly fat slob with the gut hanging over the. I don't know how he even had a sailboat. The guy looks like he should drive a Lexus in Los Angeles. And he had an old sailboat. It was worth 10 grand. You know, a piece of junk, about 32 feet long. But anyway, the point is, after this whole incident, another boat pulls up. And this slob walks down the dock and says to the guy, do this or do that, I can help you. And the guy's wife says to him, he knew what he was doing before you showed up. In other words, shut your mouth and get away. We don't need you. He was a troublemaker. He was looking for trouble. That type. And, you know, I felt it was a godsend. I did something good yesterday for the first time in years. I felt God rewarded me immediately. In a little way. I think God watches us. I really do. I know sometimes I go in and out of this thing. I know it sounds very childish to tell you this. It's little stuff. And he says, so if something went bad, God didn't like you? Yeah, God shouldn't like me. I'm no good. I'm no good like the rest of you. We're all no good. We're all born bad and we get worse. That's my view of life. We're born no good and we get worse. Unless we're raised by good people who keep us in line. We're like little animals. Children are no good. I mean, we don't want to believe that, but children are basically not good. Unless they're shaped, they turn into what you have in America today. Narcissistic, self-centered. Don't give a damn about anybody. This is what happens unless you have parents straightening you out every day.
Savage. Boom, boom, boom.
Moscow on the Hudson, big bust this afternoon out of New York City. Manhattan U.S. attorney charges 11 in alleged Russian spy ring, which I really find amazing, given that we have a government that is fundamentally, it's overtly Marxist. It's not even crypto-Marxist. Virtually everything Obama has done is an extension of Marxism, one way or the other. I mean, I've studied Marx, I've studied Lenin, Engels, I've Trotsky, I've read them all. I've read them since I'm 18 years old, and everything Obama's done is right out of Marx, Lenin, Engels. So for the U.S. attorney to charge 11 in alleged Russian spy ring is shocking. I don't even understand this one. It's unbelievable to me. They say that they want to build up relations with Congress and this and that in order to infiltrate them. Why bother? Go to the White House. I don't understand this. The right spy and one of the spies, one of them was a big, they won't report who it was. One of the spies was trying to infiltrate a big New York City stockbroker who was a big American operative of the Democrat Party. They're not going to name them. They won't name names, you see. The Russians wanted information on President Obama's plans heading into a nuclear summit with Russian officials. What do they need that for? He already gave away the store. What do they need any more information? He's yielded to anything that Putin and Medvedev want. So what do they need spies for? Just call up the White House and ask you one. Tell them what you want. Call up George Soros. He'd be glad to send you an email. I don't get it. Till I see the names and learn more about this, I don't quite know what to make of this, frankly. There's no need to spy these days with Obama in the White House. You know? Well, what's the point of sending spies to America? Michael Douglas's ex-wife, greedy for his Wall Street II money. Big deal. CNN doesn't exist anymore. Can you imagine they take a guy like that, the guy Spitzer, and put him on CNN? CNN's becoming like a reality show. The CNN network's almost like a reality show of liberal fanatics. Oh, the worst, though, the worst is the spitter. The spitter on MSNBC and Andy Mitchell, to me, they're enemies of the state. Andy Mitchell and her ex-old man who ran the Federal Reserve, if there was a just government, there'd be an investigation of Andy Mitchell and the Federal Reserve Chairman Greenspan and the damage they've done to America, allegedly, comma, point, dot, dot, dot. All right, let's go to the callers. I've done already everything here. The flag, the Vinny, a world without shrimp. It was a joke, but it didn't actually, you have to understand that. You have to understand a world without shrimp, because with the Gulf now, there's no shrimp. It's all coming now from toxic Asia. Oh, toxic Asia? My, I thought that they were superior people. Tofu-eating little folk who are so much better than us white folk. It's a great newspaper out called the Epoch Times. I only picked it up for the first time last week. It's like free in the newsstands. I normally don't read papers. This is like a real newspaper. And I didn't know who it is. Apparently, they're an anti-communist newspaper, but the journalism is on the highest level. The writing is better than the New York Times. The analysis is superior. And the stories are astonishing. So listen to the headline. Media blackout in the Gulf. Reporters face difficulties gaining access to site and cleanup workers. It turns out that your friend, Big Chin Napolitano of DHS, has imposed a no-fly zone over the Gulf. News helicopters are not allowed to fly over the Gulf and show you the damage that Obama's done to the Gulf of Mexico. Now you say that's unfair, Obama didn't do it. I would say yes. With an epic environmental disaster like this, with his foot dragging and his interference with the desire on the part of the Louisiana officials themselves to stem the tide of the oil leak, I would say yes, the damage that Obama has done is being covered up by the government. It's sort of a conspiracy of the highest order. So I'm reading this paper and got a fascinating story about the world has been kidnapped. I said, what? What's this article? I don't read anything like this. I remember I'm reading from the Epoch Times. The world has been kidnapped. Listen to this. I'm excited today all of a sudden, reinvigorated. It says chaos plagues China these days. According to official statistics, 200 million people are unemployed. Every 2 minutes, someone kills him or herself. Grievances among the citizenry have led to a rapid increase in mass protests, which are often violent. Now, listen to this. In addition, the environment this is in China. The environment is gravely polluted, with half of underground water undrinkable. The seven major rivers are completely polluted, and one-fifth of arable land is polluted by heavy metals. Corruption is rife. I couldn't believe it that someone's telling the truth about China. After all, you got guys like Sandy Berger and Madeleine Albright. Their job is to sell people in America access to the corrupt Chinese officials. You ask yourself what evil is? You ask yourself what evil is? Take a look at what evil is. That's evil. And he talks about the Communist Party and how it's wrecked China. But they make an interesting statement. It said the concept of draining the pond to catch the fish is unsustainable. I never heard it put that way. It's a Chinese concept that is refreshing when you think about it. Listen to what they mean by that. The concept of draining the pond to catch the fish is unsustainable, meaning they're destroying the land and the waters of China and the whole environment in order to keep pumping up the economy. In other words, drain the pond to catch the fish. Eventually, you're going to kill the pond and kill the fish. That's what he says they're doing there, the writer, Yan Jun Sun, Epoch Times staff, translated from the Chinese for Before It's News. I couldn't believe this. It says, and he talks basically, it's all about the Communist Party in China. And it says how they're getting ready to go to war with us. It says the CCP's military spending has escalated rapidly in recent years. Many scientific and technological research projects like the Lunar Exploration Program disguise military intent. These ventures are unrelated to the welfare of the populace, having much greater military significance than civilian use. Meanwhile, housing prices are soaring beyond the means of most citizens. The environment is being harmed without scruple, and the consumption of natural resources proceeds apace. Such damage to China's own backyard is hard to understand. The drain the pond to catch the fish development model, he writes, cannot be sustained. And thus the collapse of the CCP, that's the Communist Party of China, appears inevitable. And he says, when the Communist Party collapses, what is going to happen, he's asking. What are regime officials going to do? Escape overseas? He says, some party apparatchiks are making such preparations now. But will the Chinese masses let them go like that? Certainly not. And then he says, in that case, the Communist Party's response could be unpredictable, erratic, and a danger to world security. So war, 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 which is something most people oppose. Most sane people oppose war, and most people are consciously anti-war, but not to the detriment of their own survival. See, that's the difference between a conservative who is anti-war, such as myself, and a liberal who is anti-war on principle, who would commit Harry Carey rather than lift up a gun of self-defense or lift up a hand to protect their family. All right, let's go to the callers. What is it? Look at the time already. Look at the number of minutes without a caller. New York City, WOR. Pete, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike, it's Peter. I was so moved by your story. I'm an Italian that grew up in Bensonhurst. I'm a little more educated probably than Vinny, but I had tremendous respect for the Vinnies. I have cousins that were like Vinnies. They're called stand-up guys, and they have a lot of heart.
Oh, the best. I swear to God. Now, remember, he came over just to help. He didn't know what was going on. But the minute he saw the fat slob, it was causing me trouble. And I said, you know, that guy's causing a little trouble here, guy. And don't get involved because it's going to get nasty. You want me to throw him in the water? And basically, 2 minutes later, all his friends came off the dock. One big guy after another. It was so beautiful. See, Pete, I was outnumbered. Do you understand? I was outnumbered by the slob and his son on the boat. He figured I was an easy target to push around. All of a sudden, it looked like I had a posse on the dock, and they were hanging around with me. The guy shrank. You know what I mean?
Like, you know what we call those guys in Bensonhurst? Fat slobs. You got that
on. Yeah, we know how to call a fat slob a fat slob. New York, WR, Andy, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind? Andy, go ahead, please.
Jeez, Mike, let me tell you, you got to be from Brooklyn, I think, to really appreciate that. I got a hundred times I've been on both sides of that story. And you come away from an experience like that just feeling like God came in and...
I swear to you, that's what I felt. Because how did this timing occur? I'm talking within the right second, not even the right minute.
It was like a movie. It's like on cue, the guy, old Vinny, came in just when you needed him. His boys were there, and nobody was messing with Michael because he was there to look out.
And the guy on the boat figured that they were all together, and they were just, you know, waiting for the opportunity to come down and help me. It was amazing, Andy, because I'm a loner. I mean, I usually take care of my own problems. I don't get into trouble because I don't cause any. But sometimes trouble will find you, so you have a choice. You could shrink and walk away from it, which I do 99% of the time, incidentally. Or sometimes you have to stand up and be counted. And I had to stand up at this because this was getting uglier by the second with the guy menacing me with his boat, wouldn't shut the engine off, kept nosing again near my boat within a foot when he knew I was trying to sit down and eat. You know what I'm talking about. Just to make me uncomfortable so I would leave and he could take the spot. You know the type.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, Mike, you know, you inspired me. I've been listening to you for quite a while now. And we just... And we're tackling that issue of Zero Mosque, and we think it's disgraceful.
Oh, the Ground Zero Mosque. Yeah, go to the genius there. What's his name? Bloomberg. He never met a dollar he didn't like. Mississippi. Let's go to another city, another state. Mississippi, Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind? Tom, are you there? No, Tom. That's all. All right, so we'll go across the country then. We had already enough... from the New York. You want to talk about Kagan, the New York spying? David in San Francisco, 860 on the dial. David, what's on your mind?
You know, Michael, I have a feeling I know why the communists are upping their spying on Obama. I mean, I really think they don't believe that he's giving away the store. He's just bending over so bad, they say he must be up to something, so they're checking it out.
You mean the guy is so conciliatory to them that they think he's fooling them?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like if you were going to fight somebody and they're just doing everything that you know, so you're going to win and you're going, wait a minute, he can't be doing this. He must have a plot. So they're just making sure he's serious. They can't believe it.
I don't know why they're spying. Why would Russian spies spy on the Obama administration?
Well, look at Putin. I mean, you know, that guy's hard. That guy's sharp. And, you know, he's not going to take anything for granted. And I think he's, you know, he's with Iran. He's with China. We're looking weak. We're falling apart. He's just making sure it's for real.
I don't know. I'm reading the complaint right now. I'm posting it on Michael Savage. 8 alleged Russian spies have been busted by the feds for allegedly carrying out long-term deep cover assignments inside the United States. The Justice Department, this is under our Justice Department? Unheard of. Our attorney general is concerned about Russian spies. I find it shocking. The same attorney general who led Black Panthers intimidate people with batons at a polling place and covered up that crime is worried about Russia? Don't understand this. Read the complaint, part one, part two. According to Port Paper, the U.S. government intercepted a message from Russian intelligence headquarters in Moscow to two of the defendants. The message states that, quote, their main mission is to search and develop ties in policymaking circles in the U.S. and send intelligence reports. Duh. Search and develop ties? Take a look at the Supreme Court. Do you have to go any further than Ruth Bader Ginsburg? She wants the age of consent reduced to age 14. Take a look at where she came from. And now they're putting another one in. Ruth Jr. now is going on. Ruth Bader Ginsburg Jr. They have a hearing for today. Another one where they gave her pearls and makeup 2 weeks ago with lipstick. The first time she wore pearls, makeup, and lipstick, I think since she was 7 years old and used to act out. Oh, my God. San Diego, Gene, you're on the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Oh, thanks, Michael. I just got a poodle yesterday. He's 7 months old. His name's Dallas. And I just had to put his nose in the carpet where he peed. And I gave him a couple of swats on the butt.
Right.
But now he doesn't seem to, he won't even look at me.
Oh, now let me ask you, what kind is he? Is he a standard, a toy, or a mini?
He's only going to grow another pound, and he's about a foot high. I guess a regular.
He's a foot. No, the standard poodles are big dog. Is this one going to be, what, 20 pounds?
No, he's probably maybe 15.
All right, so he's like my dog. They're the greatest dogs on earth. They're very, very sensitive, and they're very spoiled. I got to tell you that right now. How hard did you hit him with the paper, and what did you say when you swatted him?
I used my hand. I just did it kind of gently, but firm enough so that he knew it was a pat.
All right, but what did you say anything to him?
No.
Okay, look, this is a contestable issue. I was raised to train dogs, and it all worked till this one. When they pee in the house, you take their nose and you put their nose in the pee. I know that's illegal today. You could be arrested by the Supreme Court for this, but for pet abuse. You put the nose in it and you say no, no, no. You don't even have to swat them because they hate the smell their own. You know, what dog likes that? They don't like it. I did this as a child with my dogs right up through to all of them, and they learn fast. This guy, still to this day, if you don't get him in time, he will let himself, you know, anywhere you want. I mean, some dogs are almost untrainable with regard to this. But you say he looks, I'll tell you that, he looks hurt, right?
Yeah.
He's looking away from you when you look at him?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So have you fed him yet today?
I fed him earlier this morning.
Well, don't let him start training you now, because what he's going to do is he's going to reject food. He's going to turn his head away from you and sulk like a child, and then you're going to start going towards him with the food and bringing a dish of food to his chair. That's what you're going to do, but don't do that. You got to remain friendly with him. He'll come back to you because they're just dogs. They're nice, you know, creatures, but they're fundamentally trainable in a certain regard. You say, come on, whatever his name is, here's your food now. Eat your food. Put it down. Smile at him. Give him a nice pat, you know, or pet him, and say, come on, eat your food now and leave him alone. That's all. He'll come back to you. He doesn't know why. He probably doesn't know what he did wrong, is what it is. He's shocked. Did you put his nose in the pee?
Yeah.
Well, he may still not know why. He may not yet associate his own peeing with a negative with negative behavior. He may not understand that. You know what I'm saying, Gene?
Yeah.
So have you recently lost another dog, and this is a new replacement?
Oh, I had a retriever up in Minnesota where I listened to you for years. She died of blood cancer. She was a great golden retriever. They're great with kids.
How old was she when she had to be put out?
4 or 5.
That's terrible. All right, stick with them. They're the most loving, intelligent animal I've ever had. I've never had another breed that is as alert as this dog. My dog reminds me of Pinocchio, who would like to be a boy. Remember the fable of Pinocchio, the wooden puppet, who cried because he couldn't be a boy? That's what this dog is like. You almost see him trying to speak. He has a larger vocabulary in English than the average rap star. I'll be right back.
Savage. a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine?
Congratulations. I think it'd be a
well,
good couple of days.
That's Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, and that's what's going on with the Kagan hearings. It's Mr. Rogers' neighborhood. Let me play for you Lindsey Graham, so-called Republican, before the hearings begin in clip one.
Congratulations.
Yes, there's no clip one.
I think it'll be a good couple of days. I hope you somewhat enjoy it. And I think you will. Like
you
everyone
this?
Else, I'd like
shut
to...
Shut you. You know, I can't take this anymore. We don't have a two-party system. We have a party of oligarchs. They're one party. We have a one-party government. It's an oligarchy. That's why they're wrecking the country from top to bottom. And now that's why they're inserting this unqualified, non-judge judge onto the Supreme Court. And for Lindsey Graham to get up there like Mr. Rogers and say that I hope you'll enjoy it is a disgrace. This man is supposed to be our representative. He's supposed to represent our conservative interests as a Republican. He's not supposed to try to make nice to Kagan because he wants benefits from her later on. Do you understand that? You don't even understand it, how it works. Then the shame of them all is John McCain, who's congratulating himself for supporting the firing of a general far greater than him, General McChrystal. This is a man 1,000 times greater than McCain, and McCain stabbed him in the back after he was fired. Listen to clip four.
I would like to say in General McChrystal's behalf that he played a key role in Iraq in the efforts against al-Qaeda. A lot of this is not known and may never be known, but General McChrystal did a great job there. The president took appropriate action, and we wish General
The president
McChrystal
took appropriate
well.
Action. Shame on you, McCain. You know, I never thought you could get lower, but you get lower by the day. Shame on you, John McCain. You're a true Manchurian candidate. Who brainwashed you?
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Shrimp boats are not coming. Forget about it. It's over. It's over. The Gulf is over. I don't know what's worse, eating shrimp from the Gulf coated in oil or eating sewer shrimp from Asia. Because, you know, you got to understand something. We are living in a time where we have politicians who are fundamentally moral shrimp. We have a woman who is not qualified to assume a seat on the highest court in the land. She is a shrimp amongst legal scholars. She is no scholar. She's never been a judge. So since we're talking about shrimp, let's talk about shrimp. As the Gulf Coast oil spill is gushing, where are we turning the U.S. seafood suppliers? To Asia, to make sure that you have enough shrimp for their gumbos. And by the way, since Kagan is from the Upper West Side, where I would say shrimp is probably more popular than the Bill of Rights, I would say that the people on the Upper West Side of Manhattan, the libs, spend more time and more passion talking about shrimp than they do about the First Amendment, for example. I think it's worth talking about shrimp. Price of plump black tiger shrimp is at a 10-year high in Vietnam, selling for about $6.14 a pound, said Bill Dung. I mean, I don't want to make mockery of the name, but that pretty much says it all. Bui Dung? You know, do you know how shrimp are raised in Asia? They're called sewer shrimp amongst people who know the difference. They swim in sewage. Seafood from Asia is toxic poison. They don't have proper sanitation. I told you earlier that the waters in China in particular are polluted with heavy metals. You think it's any different in Vietnam or in Thailand or in Bangladesh? I mean, I know that the Beatles sang for benefit for Bangladesh 30 years ago, but have you ever seen Bangladesh? I wouldn't eat food from there anymore. So what, are you going to die if you don't have a shrimp? You know, this is one of the things that the kosher food laws, by the way, and I'm not religious or anything, they banned shellfish. They were smart. They banned shellfish for the same reasons that we see today. It wasn't that they didn't like a shrimp. It wasn't that the old olive growers from the Old Testament didn't like a shrimp. They probably knew that they were bottom feeders and they were dirty. So they said, don't eat crustaceans because they live on the bottom and you'll get sick from them. They knew this in biblical times. So an Orthodox Jew or a Muslim doesn't eat a shrimp. I don't know if the Muslims don't eat shrimp. I see them in plenty of the seafood restaurants knocking it down pretty good. I don't really know. I don't understand that part of it. Can a Muslim help me with that? I never see an Orthodox Jew who's religious in a restaurant that I go to because they're kosher. But Muslims, they come in with the headscarves and they press down, knocking down the food left and right. I don't know. What's their restriction other than pork? They can eat a shrimp? The Quran lets you have a shrimp but not a pig? I don't understand how that works. So someone can enlighten me on that one. So we got the Asian shrimpers' doors are being pounded upon right now. There's a frenzy. Because Elena Kagan and her friends, they must have shrimp for the barbecue this summer. It's the number one most consumed seafood in America. People eat more shrimp than they do canned tuna. Did you know that? How much shrimp do you think the average American eats? 4 pounds a year. Americans have an insatiable craving for shrimp, eating about 4 lubs a year. And while wild Gulf shrimp provides only about 7 to 9% of that supply, the oil spill will likely send U.S. restaurants and supermarkets into a short-term frenzy, said Fatima Dung. Oh, no, Fatima Ferdhaus at a company. Larger shrimp are in short supply. Why am I talking about shrimp? Because it's much better than to talk about Scott Brown, Lindsey Graham, and the other Republican stooges. Did you hear Scott Brown today? Who was the first one to alert you to him? I'm going to play for you now, Scott Brown in Massachusetts. Remember the much ballyhooed, oh, he replaced Kennedy, a conservative one, a great white hope. 2 days later, I told you, forget about it. I read it from a mile away because I watched The Brotherhood on Showtime, and I know what a politician is in Massachusetts in particular. Doesn't matter what party he's in. So now listen to this. I want you to listen. This is Scott Brown, so-called Republican from Massachusetts, introducing the totally, absolutely, 100% unqualified shrimp, Elena Kagan, at her SCOTUS hearing. Hold it. In clip 35, not 4, 35.
She's undoubtedly a brilliant woman who has served a country in a variety of capacities and has made significant contributions to Massachusetts, and I certainly thank her for that. And this
now, let's stop right there. Are you ready? It's a whitewash. It's a whitewash. She's unqualified at any speed. Elena Kagan is unqualified at any weight to be Supreme Court nominee. Number one, never a judge. Don't you find it a little, doesn't that have an eerie factor to you? That Obama would drain the swamp of Harvard University to come up with perhaps the least qualified liberal in America. In other words, there are liberals who are qualified, who, let's say, I oppose politically, but at least they've been a judge. We have some record of them as a judge. The woman could be a lunatic as a judge, a total mad woman. It could be beyond comprehension that she's a lunatic. Why would he drain the swamp and come up with the last shrimp on the bottom of the swamp? Elena Kagan, try to foist her onto the Supreme Court. Her record on the military alone should disqualify her. She praised the university's decision to ban military recruiters from Harvard's campus because the military banned openly gay service members. Immediately, she's an extremist. She helped Bill Clinton on abortion to push through partial birth abortion. In other words, infanticide. She's in favor of it. She has argued that illegal aliens or terrorists, or non-citizens, whatever you want to call them, Islamo-fascists who are detained, must be able to appeal military commission decisions to a civilian court, making the military commissions irrelevant. In that regard, she's more extreme than the court under FDR. On guns, she counseled against granting a review to a case challenging the gun control laws in the D.C. under the Second Amendment. So this woman, her record on liberalism, listen to what she said. Quote, where I grew up on Manhattan's Upper West Side, nobody ever admitted to voting Republican. So she has absolutely no shame in admitting she's an extremist, out of touch with the American people. If she was voted upon, if the American people still had a scintilla of power in the country, and we could vote for Supreme Court justices, which, by the way, we should do since they have such effects on our lives, she'd lose 80 to 20. And now I'll take your calls on the Savage Nation. What do you want to talk about, the Russian spy story that just broke this afternoon? Because it doesn't make sense to me. Why would the Russians try to run spies in New York when they're on such good terms with the Obama administration? Why would they have to run spies here? I don't understand it. When they have guy Madeleine Albright, who I'm not accusing her of being a spy. She's better than a spy for them. And half the Congress, what, they, you have to spy on them? Just call them up, email them. They'll tell you what you want to know for a free meal. They're cheaper than the bums in the cafes of San Francisco who would give away anything for a free coffee. So what are the spies trying to get close to what? I don't understand that one. These are some of the topics that have made it into the Reasonable Savage Nation today. I told you already about the flag story, didn't I? I bought a flag for July 4th in the hardware store, and I ran into a casual acquaintance who's the wife of a judge. "How's the judge?" I said. She said, "Oh, well, you know, he has Alzheimer's." I said, "Well, I guarantee he knows more about the law than Kagan does." We got a laugh out of that as we both went to the back room to look for our American flag made in China. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, today is a day that shall live for a long time. The Supreme Court upheld gun owner rights, the state and the local level, by a 5-4 decision, again showing you how precariously our freedoms hang in the balance. And the extremist that Obama's trying to shovel onto the Supreme Court, the unqualified Kagan, as you well know, would rob you of your gun rights. I expect nothing less from this left-winger president that we have, this Eastern European dictator in the making. But we're only one vote away from tyranny in this country. And one of the plaintiffs who joined a federal lawsuit to challenge Chicago's 28-year-old handgun ban is Otis McDonald. And the reason he wanted a handgun at home was to protect himself from gangs. The Supreme Court held today that the Constitution's Second Amendment restrains government's ability to significantly limit the right to keep and bear arms. This is the second such decision by the Supreme Court in less than about a year. And it's only because there is a 5-4 conservative majority on the Supreme Court. Don't you think that a human being in the United States of America should have a right to defend themselves with a gun in a nation filled with so many illegal guns? Don't you think so? I do. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Oklahoma, Egan, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please. Egan, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
You're Savage?
Yes, you're on the radio. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. I come from East Germany, you know, and I cannot understand this, Obama. There's so much in common that he has with the leadership he had there, and he's really a scary guy. You know, I'm not a perfect man myself. I was a member of the Stasi when I was in East Germany. But
oh boy! Tell the people the Stasi were the secret police and quite a brutal regime. Are you saying that he's much like the country you left behind? You feel the same things happening here?
Absolutely, almost exactly, because there is something about the man. I've sensed it from the time he first ran. It's just that he seems very sneaky. He lies. He makes things up. He has people, you know, pretending to have problems when they don't even have problems to try to get things done. This is very typical of the way they did it in the communist countries. And before that, the Nazis did things like that also, you know?
Now, you're a man who, you actually work with the secret police, and you're saying things like this is amazing.
Because I'm not like that anymore. I've changed. I realized how wrong I was with these things. But, you know, we didn't know in those days because we were brainwashed. I noticed a lot of the supporters of Obama, they seem the same way, but very much. And even the way when at the school there, when the little kids start.
Yes,
you know,
yes. Things. They're like the young pioneers in the ex-Soviet Union. But, Egan, haven't you discovered that when you try to have a reasonable conversation and warn Americans, they give you a blank stare? the liberals, the Obamaites, they look at you like you're crazy?
Absolutely. They don't understand it at all.
I hear this over and over again from Eastern Europeans who are trying to alert Americans, and they say they've never met such brainwashed individuals as fairly well-educated, reasonably affluent Americans who have no idea who Obama is.
I tell you something, if he had his way, he would have a secret police right here in this country. He is already, what he said when he was running for president, it was very scary because about having...
I have played that on my show 50 times, and most people have not heard it, where he said he wants a civilian national security force just as big, just as strong, just as powerful, just as well-funded as the U.S. military. How the people don't understand who this man is beyond me. You know, Egan, but what one man told me is this. He said he came from Poland. So he says to me, the reason the liberals he talks to don't understand anything is because they don't know what communism actually is. They only know what they read and what they've read. While men like you lived inside the system and know how terrible it is, secret police grabbing people off the streets, beating them up and putting them into a re-education camps or worse.
Many things I've done that I'm ashamed of to this day. I have nightmares about it because now, you know, I understand how wrong they were. And
well, what did you come here under asylum?
Kind of, yeah.
All right, let's not go into it. I understand you have no, you don't want to talk about it. I understand, but sounds like you'd be a good bodyguard.
Well, that's why I don't do that type of stuff now. I drive a truck now because I don't want to get back into that kind of fear. Even, you know, sometimes there's things that even the police do in this country. I don't, I think they're going too far now.
But I do too. I do too. Did you see the story that I put on my website, Egan, about a housing authority cop in New York, black man? He beat up an Iraq war veteran in the lobby of a public housing project. He beat him senselessly with a baton while a man was handcuffed on the floor. That's one black man to another. Do you know that housing cop was found not guilty today? Would you believe this?
I'll believe anything because things are not going...
Egan, I've watched the videotape on my website. Someone got it on the security cameras. I got nauseous watching it. He was beating the man over and over again with a nightstick while he was on the ground. How in the world could he not be found guilty? I don't understand this.
Because I tell you something, even you, Michael, sometimes you're with the police. You say the police are this and the police are... But let me tell you something. The police, many... The police do tend to like power, even in countries, in democratic countries.
No, I understand the psychology of the police, but who is going to protect us other than the wolfhound? In other words, there are a lot of wolves out there, so we have to get the wolfhounds to protect us so wolfhounds can be just as vicious as the wolf. The problem is you have to constrain the wolfhound.
Well, you know, today, a very...
I mean, I'd rather have a wolfhound protecting me than a poodle, if you know what I'm saying. You see who they hire for police in San Francisco? Your hair would stand up. A 4'9" woman who can't fire a gun. They just got rid of her. She retired on about a $200,000 a year pension. The woman didn't qualify for her own pistol license. That's who they made police chief.
I know.
I mean, so, you know, you don't know which way to turn as an American citizen other than to take to have a gun in your house and, God forbid, protect yourself if you need to.
That's one good thing today with that ruling by the Supreme Court. If more people had enough guns in their house and knew how to use them, they wouldn't need so many police. There is no reason to have these many. And, you know, when I travel around the country, in states that have good gun laws, you don't have the amount of law enforcement that you have in places like New York or San Francisco or Washington, D.C., where it's wall to wall. It reminds
yeah, well, because the bad guys are afraid that they pull a gun out in a restaurant, three people are liable to stand up and blast them. That's why Florida is a fairly safe state, by the way.
Texas.
There's a lot of old people who are armed and dangerous in Florida who are willing to fire their guns. They're ex-cops, ex-military, and they will use the gun on the bad guys. That's why the bad guys are somewhat controlled in Florida. They don't know who might have a gun. Thank you for the call. 1-800-449-8255. Oh, boy, what a day. Who would have thought that today would be such a wonderful day in radio? Moving into July 4th on the Savage Nation. Back in a moment with all the stories about the media blackout in the United States of America.
Savage.
Do without shrimp for a couple of months. See if your life doesn't get better. I mean, you might feel better not eating sewer shrimp to begin with when you think about it. What if you cut shrimp out of your diet for 3 months? What, would you die? I mean, you don't live on the Upper West Side where it's a requirement. It's like an essential food for Elena Kagan and her friends. Shrimp in every way. Shrimp this, shrimp that. Same in Boca Raton. You think half of them would die if they didn't have a shrimp. Sewer shrimp, you got toxins in there, heavy metals, bacteriological agents. So do without them, that's all. Now, look, the spying thing in New York is an interesting story. I have the case in front of me, conspiracy to act as unregistered agents of a foreign government. So in other words, they're acting on behalf of the Russian Federation without prior notification to the Attorney General. What I find comedic about this is that the defendants, known and unknown, willfully and unlawfully, knowingly, would and did act in the United States as agents of a foreign government, specifically the Russian Federation, without prior notification to the Attorney General. How does that differ from Madeleine Albright and Sandy Berger and their law firm that they're associated with, Hogan and Hartson, actively lobbying on behalf of the People's Republic of China? Tell me how that differs. You mean because Hogan and Hartson has notified the Attorney General? Because Sandy Berger has notified the Attorney General that fundamentally he's acting on behalf of a foreign country? As an agent of a foreign government, he's not an agent because he's a lobbyist? This is crazy. I'm telling you, something's wrong with this story. It seems like grandstanding on the part of Eric Holder to cover his butt. He's covering something up here by even taking this case. Something's wrong with the picture. I have very good instincts in the media. No one has better instincts. I don't understand this story at all. Why now? To show us that we're really in good hands? And that the Attorney General's doing his job? Defendant number one, Christopher Metsos, Richard Murphy, Cynthia Murphy, Donald Howard Heathfield, Tracy Leanne Foley, Michael Zatoli, Patricia Mills, and Juan Lazaro, and Vicky Peleas. Well, we don't know who they are. So Maria Alrici is the special agent with the FBI, and they've been following him since the 1990s, up until the present. I don't understand what they did. Others known and unknown, unlawfully, willfully, and knowingly, to combine, conspire, confederate, and agree together and with each other to commit an offense against the United States to violate Section 951 of Title 18 U.S. Code. Any lobbyist for Russia or China or any other foreign country is doing the same thing these people did. Only because what? They expose it that they're a lobbyist? They're not a spy? The whole thing is just a matter of rhetoric here. Let's go to New York, where Jimmy is calling us from WOR. Jimmy, I know you're not going to talk about shrimp. Jimmy, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
I wanted to get back. You earlier in the show talked about Epoch Times. I'm familiar with them. I think they do great work about the Chinese communist. But
great.
I haven't checked.
It's a great newspaper. It's unbelievably well written. So what do you think about the Russian spy case today?
Well, I don't think they're spies. The way I hear it, they're agents of influence. That there's a big difference there. Agents of influence are more dangerous if that's
it says. Wait, it says Metsos receives money from Russian government official, and the money is given to SVR illegals.
Well, I heard
Metsos secretly buried some of the money in upstate New York, and 2 years later in 06, the Seattle conspirators flew to New York and dug it up. You hear this?
Yep.
Well, what were they doing, though?
Well, I heard the report that they were trying to, they were long-term agents of influence penetrating America. They wanted to influence policy. See, a spy gathers information, like a spy would tell me what cards you have in your hand. My agent of influence will tell you what cards to play in order for me to win.
I understand that, but how did they differ from Madeleine Albright and Sandy Berger, who are fundamentally lobbyists for the Chinese government? How do they differ?
Well, I guess the long-term agents, they're not known, and the other ones are known, and legally, according to what the laws are written.
On or about May 16, 2004, pursuant to a judicial order, law enforcement agents conducted video surveillance from multiple cameras positioned in the immediate vicinity of the Long Island Railroad's Forest Hill Station in Queens, New York. The May 16 video surveillance of the Forest Hill train station reflects that on numerous occasions, blah, 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 they saw them meeting there at the station. This is like real Cold War-ish. Why would Obama pursue this case to begin with?
Well, this case was probably way before Obama. You know, we still have some good guys in the government. They don't know.
Okay, that's sort of what I'm thinking. This case is so old, it's come up that if Obama was to have quashed it under this attorney general that we have, he would have been accused of being pro-communist, and right. He would have given himself away. That's about it. And these are small fry, right?
Who's a small fry?
These guys they caught here.
I don't know. I don't know enough about the case yet, but you're sure there's more than this? There's way more than this. I mean, the FBI no longer is even allowed to watch the Institute for Policy Studies. That's the KGB's biggest influence operation this country or the world has probably ever seen. They influence everything in America, and they influence with they get their policies implemented through the House Progressive Caucus.
The country is like Swiss cheese today. We've been penetrated every which way that there's half whole and half cheese. Thanks for the call. Already the audience has faded. After I told the Vinny story and the Vinny and the flag, the audience went to sleep. It's late already on the East Coast. Here it's early. It's early for me. The minute the show's over, I'm going to have a good time tonight. You know, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow may never come. That's my new motto. But now that I'm giving up shrimp, because I don't want sewer shrimp, I bought the frozen shrimp, the big ones, years ago, and it said Bangladesh. I never bought them again. I envisioned Asian sewer water. On or about June 19th, 04, at approximately 3 o'clock, Zatoli arrived at an entrance to Manhattan Central Park. After Zatoli arrived, a member of an FBI surveillance team saw Mills sitting on a bench. Mills remained on the bench for approximately 1.5 hours, looking toward the park entrance where Zatoli was. Basing on my training experience and participation in this investigation, I believe that Mills was engaging in counter-surveillance, watching the area where Zatoli was trying to meet Murphy, in order to determine whether the meeting was being surveyed. Big deals, like a John le Carré novel. I mean, I grew up on this junk. How many movies can you watch with communism and anti-communism? You wake up and the country's like Swiss cheese already. A shocker. They're lobbying for Russia in America. You hear this? It's unbelievable to me. Take a look at Medvedev having an ice cream last week here in San Francisco. What, are they going to accuse them of lobbying? He was lobbying here. He went to Silicon Valley here in the Bay Area to try to get the software firms to build a Silicon Valley in Russia. And they're tripping over themselves to do business with Russia. So what is this all about? This case seems like an ossified elephant to me. It seems like an elephant from the Cold War where they fell into a tar pit. The 2009 Brush Pass. Russian government official number 3 gives money to defendant Richard Murphy. What were they doing? Pass is $300K? North White Plains train station, Harlem line? Quiet and deserted on weekends? Scheme of flash meeting in dead zone? What is the FBI agent bored and wanted to write a novel after she retires? Murphy gives the money he received during the 09 brush pass to Zatoli. Leave me alone with this. I got a headache just reading this damn thing. I don't even know what it's about. I mean, I'm a fairly reasonably informed man. But this whole Russian spy case that came out, it seems like fluff to me. It was probably started, it says from the 90s till now. It only took 20 years for the government to break the case. That's all. You know they're very quick on the draw. 20 years of surveillance and cameras and money and agents and retirement funds that you can't believe. They're retiring at $300,000 down and $150,000 a year because he strained his back in the last year doing surveillance with a video camera in Central Park. Oh, I hurt my back. On the job? Yes, sir. Well, that's 130% of your annual salary. Then you retire with $293,000 cash. And you get an annual of $175,000, but because you were injured on the job, because you strained your back with a video camera, officer, you're going to collect $179,000 a year tax-free because it's an on-the-job injury. Next case, you wonder why the country's broke. The country is broke for many reasons. Number one, pensions. Teachers, cops, firemen. I know you don't want to hear it. I'm telling you as I stand here, whether you want to hear it from me or not, it's happening. They're going to cut your pensions. Because they're unsupportable, they're unsustainable. People cannot afford this. The government, state, city, and local, they can't afford it. You can't retire on $100,000 a year more in a pension, expect people to pay it the rest of your life. Yes, I know you signed the contract. Yes, I know you worked very hard for your life, and you did it because you thought you'd retire early with a pension. Things change. Things happen. That's all. It's unsustainable. And you read this morning, Bernanke, you know the guy who looks like he needs a shave? The Federal Reserve Chairman, he says that we've got a tool at our disposal to correct what's going on. It's called a printing press. We can print as much money as we need. Have you ever seen anything like this? Now, admittedly, I have a sponsor on the show, a wonderful sponsor, Swiss America, the gold coin guy. I'm telling you that up front, but I spent another a week's salary on gold last week. I don't see how this is sustainable. If you have a Federal Reserve chairman who says, we have a wonderful tool at our disposal to fight this financial mess we're in with Obama spending $4 trillion after a year and a half, and we're going to just print more money, I say, doesn't this end? When does this end? When does it end? I don't know when it ends. I don't know how it ends. But I don't think it ends peacefully. I believe it ends the way all other international crises end, which is a war. And whether it will be a limited war or, a God forbid, an international war is anyone's guess. But things spin out of control. When you have depressions like this building in Europe, and you have a fundamental depression in the United States of America that's being swept under the rug by the printing press, eventually they're going to have to go to war to pump up the economy. What do you think we're in Afghanistan for? Why do you think we have been in Iraq and Afghanistan forever? Why? It's gone on longer than World War II. Why can't we win it? Well, again, there's many reasons. The question is, why haven't we won it? The answer is because they don't want to win it. And that goes back to Bush. He didn't want to win in Afghanistan either. And this one doesn't want to win either because he's not there on his own. He's there by the money people put him in. And they know that war sustains an economy. Just think about the jobs. Just think about the jobs in the military-industrial complex. I'm basically telling you what you already know. You know what I'm saying? You know all of these things. So that's why I'd rather talk about Gulf shrimp. We could actually do a shrimp fry-off one day, a taste test on the air where I could eat shrimp, like blind shrimp tasting, or the tiger shrimp from Vietnam better than the Gulf shrimp coated with oil. And you coat them in oil anyway when you think about it. Maybe some smart entrepreneur would say, does not need to be dipped in olive oil. It comes with pure crude, packaged with clean, cure, prude, coated with clean, pure, crude oil, the way nature intended, the new Gulf shrimp. And it's all blackened already with crude oil. And just think about it, sizzles the minute you throw it on a grill. I mean, it's not a bad idea. You don't even have to put oil on it. Instead of olive oil, you have crude oil. What's wrong with that? I'll be right back. Savage. So we're studying the actual lawsuit here, the FBI indictment, rather, against the spy case in New York that broke today. It's very complicated. I think, personally, it sounds like a distraction on the part of the Justice Department, which is under fire for being, let's say, questionable in so many regards on the Eric Holder. So what, he's pursuing this case and breaking it today, so suddenly we think we have a government that is protective of us? Is that a possibility? Well, here's a piece of it that I'll read for you that hasn't hit the papers yet. It comes up in the indictment. In a task from the spring of 2009 in advance of Obama's visit to Russia, the SVR requested information on the U.S. position with respect to a new strategic arms limitation treaty, Afghanistan, and Iran's nuclear program. Moscow Center indicated that it needs intels related to this topic, which should reflect approaches and ideas of Russia policy team members. Four names of sub-cabinet U.S. foreign policy officials were omitted. Uh-huh. Did you hear that? Four names of sub-cabinet U.S. foreign policy officials omitted. The most important information has been redacted and omitted from this report, which is the names of the people in the Obama and previously the Bush administrations who they had infiltrated and were working on. Those are the names I'm interested in, not Murphy and Schmurphy, not the pimps who were bought out by the Russian government. No, I'd like the names of the governmental officials who are the real threats and what they're doing today. That's what we're never going to get. Try to outline their views and, most importantly, Obama's goals, which he expects to achieve during the summit in July, that's last year. And how does his team plan to do it? Arguments, provisions, means of persuasion to lure Russia into cooperation in U.S. interests. This is very intriguing. This is worthy of a whole book. Here's another report to the Center about prospects for the global gold market. You hear this? In October of 2009, the SVR, this is the Russian government, info on gold versus useful information was sent directly after due adaptation to the Minister of Finance. Wow, this is amazing. So it's a mixture of industrial espionage and policy espionage. You got to read the whole case. It's up on michaelsavage.com. It's pretty amazing stuff if you're interested in the real McCoy. Maybe you can provide information about White House internal kitchen. I don't know what that means. Invite her to venues, to major political party headquarters in New York, for instance. In short, consider carefully all options in regard to financier. I want to know who the financier was. They've left out from this report the government officials who they were working with and the financier in New York City who they were working with. That's the important information that we the people shouldn't be entitled to. I think it would be very refreshing for the FBI to release the names of the these individuals rather than individuals nobody has any knowledge of. Who cares about Cynthia Murphy and the others that were indicted? We care about those in our government who they worked with. Who they worked with. You get it? Arizona, Wade, welcome to the Savage Nation. Topic, please.
Hey, yeah, John, thanks for taking your my call. Just letting you know, having been in the Army, worked a little bit with Intel, this is just a distraction. It's basically they're wanting you to focus on this so that you don't see what the right hand's doing.
And that's so right. They want us to focus on how good they're doing against communism while they're slipping a communist onto the Supreme Court called Kagan. Her father was a street left-wing lawyer. She's a lifetime left-winger. Her sympathies lie with Marxism and Leninism. And yet these idiots in the so-called Republican Party are treating her like she's something distinguished already. Why? When did she become distinguished all of a sudden? Tell me what distinguishes Kagan. Why she should be treated with such dignity already when they haven't even questioned her yet. The only one asking her a question is Sessions. The eeriest comments today came from the ever-respectful Charles Schumer, one of the most eerie people in American history, next to Patrick Leahy, Leaky Leahy, at the Kagan hearings today. He also supported Senator Byrd, who died today, the former Ku Klux Klan member. And look, anybody could have been a member of the Ku Klux Klan in their youth. People change, you know. And Leahy had nothing but sympathy for Byrd. He didn't forgive him. I mean, he forgave him for being a KKK member in his early days. And I suppose he'll also forgive Kagan for being a member of the radical left for her entire life until today, when suddenly she put on makeup and pearls and earrings, and suddenly she's Miss Mainstream. Listen to clip 16.
In fact, we even have this nominee's senior thesis, her graduate thesis, nearly 70 articles she authored for the Daily Princetonian as a college student, almost 200 speeches, and another 200 interviews.
Yes, the only thing is, Charles. And according to you, it doesn't show an extreme left-wing fanatic. No, Kagan has terrible record on terrorist detainees. She has a record as a gun seizer. She said, where I grew up on Manhattan's Upper West Side, nobody ever admitted to voting Republican. She opposed the military from Harvard because of their openly anti-gay policies. She helped Bill Clinton successfully argue for partial birth abortion, which, of course, is infanticide. In other words, she opposes every decent value known to the average American. She is out of touch with the mainstream of America. She is again being chosen because she's part of that very, very small minority of extreme radicals that Obama seems to attract and be attracted to. Again, I tell you, last week it was shown again that the conservatives in America outnumber every other group by a large majority, and people identify as liberals account for only 20% of those surveyed. And yet amongst those who surveyed claim to be liberals, most of them probably oppose half of Obama's progressive policies, which are mirror images of the Soviet era in Eastern Europe. And yet here he's picking a judge who would be very comfortable sitting on a bench in Hungary in 1955.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show,
the Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
The Second Amendment as an individual right now becomes a real part of American constitutional law. I mean, the question before the court was, can law-abiding citizens go out and buy and own a firearm? And the court said yes, anywhere they live.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work like a slave all day.
The big thing today is the gun rights, 5-4. We're allowed to keep our weapons. One vote shy of becoming a dictatorship. One vote shy. Now, Obama would like it to be 9-0 in favor of communism, and he wants to put an unqualified idiot named Elena Kagan onto the Supreme Court. There are five reasons to oppose the Elena Kagan Supreme Court nomination. Let's start with the first. She's never been a judge. Now, this is precedented, by the way. We've had previous presidents who were dictators, early dictators, who wanted to stock the Supreme Court with unqualified stooges. So Obama's in a long line of such. There are five other reasons to oppose Kagan's Supreme Court nomination other than that she's never been a judge. One, her record on the military. Two, her record on abortion. Three, her record on terrorist detainees. Four, her record on guns. And five, her record on liberalism. Let's start with the first, her record on the military. Kagan, as Dean of Harvard Law, Kagan praised the university's decision to ban military recruiters from Harvard's campus over the military's ban on openly gay service members. In other words, she put her agenda, her gay agenda, ahead of the nation's national security. On abortion, Ms. Kagan helped President Clinton successfully navigate and control partial birth abortion in the U.S. Senate. She wanted late-term abortion. In other words, she wanted infanticide. Number three, her record on terrorist detainees. Old Kagan argued that non-citizen detainees, meaning what? Non-citizen detainees mean terrorists, must be able to appeal military commission decisions to a civilian court, making the military commissions irrelevant. See? Classic liberal stooge. On guns, Kagan counseled against granting a review to a case challenging the gun control laws in the District of Columbia under the Second Amendment. That's right. In addition, the National Review recently reported that in 1996, Ms. Kagan apparently tied the NRA to the KKK while debating the Clinton administration's position on a bill. Does it get worse? Well, you decide. She said, "Where I grew up on Manhattan's Upper West Side, nobody ever admitted to voting Republican." One last note. In addition to never being a judge, her father was a street radical lawyer. This is what happens when you lower the common denominator to the lowest level. Oppose Kagan's Supreme Court nomination. Unfortunately, we can't vote on this. So you have the five reasons to oppose Kagan's nomination for the Supreme Court. Did you write them down yet? One, her record on the military. Two, her record on abortion. Three, her record on terrorist detainees. Four, her record on guns. And five, her record on liberalism. Look, I know you worry about what's going on in Afghanistan, what's going on in the Gulf, and what's going on in the White House. But with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at Carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE, and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's Carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE. Now, I want to go back to the Kagan story and the hearings today on this unqualified left-wing stooge, Kagan. I use the word in Judiciary Committee, which I created instead of judiciary, as a form of the word injudicious, which means indiscreet or unwise. And the members of the Senate Committee are both indiscreet and unwise. Right? You know she tried to kick the military off the Harvard campus. She took money from Goldman Sachs just like her boss Obama. Her senior thesis at Princeton was entitled "To the Final Conflict, Socialism in New York City." She wrote in an article in 1996 that redistribution of speech is not an illegitimate end for government. Did you catch that? It's beyond comprehension how you liberals can permit this. And today, as seemingly every senator began their remarks with a tribute to the former senator and KKK member Robert Byrd, it was made perfectly that there were going to be no hard questions for Kagan. Schumer, the big shoe from Brooklyn, said that she was the best this country has to offer. The Queen of Diamonds, Dianne Feinstein, said she was not filibusterable. And Republican Lindsey Graham, trial lawyer, said he hoped she enjoyed the hearings. He sounded more like Mr. Rogers than a U.S. senator. But here's something even more bizarre for those of you in the Tea Party who once had faith in Senator Scott Brown. Scott Brown got up before the committee and introduced Kagan. He called her, quote, an impressive and pleasant individual. Do you understand what is happening here? It doesn't matter whether or not they have a D or an R after their names. They all seem to praise racists like Robert Byrd, as long as they're part of the old boys and old girls club. And they all praise socialists because that's the only acceptable behavior on the injudiciary committee. All right, play Blue Monday.
Blue Monday.
You know, something about Michael Savage brightens the spirit. I am a treasure for hard times. Who said that? Who said, oh, I don't know, I listened to him because something about him brightens the spirit. Michael Savage is a treasure for hard times. Who said that? I said that. Because if I am not for myself, who will be? If I'm only for myself, who am I? All right, I'll be right back.
Saturday.
He was moaning, groaning, moving, and acting in a very suggestive way. It was unreal. I never even had any of my hotel clients get angry, yell, or act out at me before. During the massage episode, I realized, much to my horror, that I was in the perfect storm and that I was in a room with someone who was Teflon-coated in terms of credibility and celebrity status.
Love to me, she had blonde hair and eyes blue.
It's time for something lighter. Joining us now is James Herson with his report on what's going on in Hollywood.
Now we have this sordid tale of a Portland massage therapist who gave the police a detailed statement back in 2009. And if it's true, it shows that former VP and current green icon Al Gore was doing his part to warm up the Pacific Northwest. In the statement, a woman claimed Gore groped her and made other non-consensual sexual advances during a late-night massage session in October 2006 in a room at an upscale hotel. The massage bill was reportedly $540, a hefty sum, but it probably cost a little extra because maybe the price included some carbon offsets. She reportedly told the police that she had told two friends what happened. And in a Monica Lewinsky deja vu, she reportedly kept the clothes she wore that night, including a pair of black pants with, I hate to say this, with stains on them.
Don't get me started.
According to the records, Portland police didn't contact the woman's friends, didn't obtain the potential evidence, and didn't interview any potential witnesses at the hotel. The police claim there was insufficient evidence to support this woman's allegations. They weren't acting like police normally act in these kinds of celebrity cases. In her statement to the investigator, the woman said she was called to the hotel about 10:30 p.m. sometime in October 2006 to provide a massage for Gore, who had registered under the assumed name Mr. Stone. Earlier that evening, Gore had addressed a large crowd at a climate change conference. He told them that that man-made global warming is the most important moral challenge of our time. A moral challenge indeed. Once inside his ninth floor suite, the woman says that Gore changed into a bathrobe, spoke of his grueling travel schedule, his need to relax, and told her, "Call me Al." While giving Gore a massage, he demanded she go lower, you know, like below the equator. And pretty soon he grabbed her hand and shoved it under the sheet.
Oh, my God.
Quote, "I felt like I was dancing on the edge of a razor," she told the investigators. She tried to use some kind of acupressure to relax him, and she thought she had put Al Gore to sleep when she went into the bathroom to wash up. She came out to pack up, and that's when she says Gore wrapped her in an inescapable embrace. And then he groped her. She was trying to break down her massage table. She called him, she says, a crazed sex poodle, whatever that is. But then she tried to distract him by pointing out a box of chocolates on a nearby table. And it worked. Gore, according to this woman, in Forrest Gump style, went for the chocolates. But then he cornered the woman. I guess the chocolates affected him. He fondled her. He shoved his tongue in her mouth. He pressed against her. And he tried to pull her camisole strap down. She told him to stop. She said she was distressed, shocked, terrified, intimidated by his physical size. She said Gore was rotund, according to her. She said he had a violent temper, a dictatorial, commanding attitude. It wasn't like his, quote, "Mr. Smiley global warming concern persona," she said.
Hmm.
And later, then, he tried to lure her into the bedroom to hear a song. To hear a song by Pink titled, get this, "Dear Mr. President," which was on his iPod. That's what Gore has on his iPod? So she says the former VP sat on the edge of the bed, motioned for her to join him, and that's when suddenly, quote, "He flipped me on my back. He threw his whole body face down on top of me, pinning me." And she screamed these words, "Get off me, you big lummox." She also said Gore had finished a beer and opened a bottle of Grand Marnier while she was in the room. The woman later told the investigators that she didn't call the police because she was afraid. She was afraid she wouldn't be believed. She thought her reputation would be destroyed. Well, she had watched the Clinton administration. Interestingly, she said that even friends of hers who had voted for Gore didn't support her.
What a surprise.
She told investigators last year that she was not out for money, but only wants justice. She said Gore shouldn't get a free pass just because of his position. A Portland Tribune reporter, and sometime after this, it was either 2007 or 2008, made a public records request, got a hold of this police report from the Portland police, and the newspaper spiked the story.
Oh, like we didn't see that coming.
They buried the Gore allegation. Afterwards, the woman met with the Portland police last year, 2009, and restated her claims. She offered clothing she had saved from the incident as evidence, but they refused to take it. And in June of 2010, she went back to the police. She asked for all the copies of her statements, and she said she's going to take the case to the media. Now, the statute of limitations in Oregon for this kind of a charge, which is called third-degree sex abuse, normally is 4 years. It would have run. But when the accused is not a resident of the state, it's extended up to 3 years. So it's still going, won't run out till 2013. And the DA's office in this county knew about the case, but was under the impression that the woman didn't want to file charges and would pursue civilly instead, which she hasn't yet. And the DA said, you know, they weren't informed that another statement was taken last year and only found out from the media. And they said, you know what? If the complainant and the Portland police want to pursue a criminal prosecution, we'll do it if there's some additional investigation.
Really?
This may be a tabloid-style story, but it's legit news nonetheless. Because after all, Gore was the 45th Vice President of the United States. He's a Hollywood movie star. He's won an Oscar for that so-called documentary, An Inconvenient Truth. He's won a Grammy for a Best Spoken Word album. And he's been given a Nobel Peace Prize for his lies. But in addition, Gore won an Emmy for current TV, a Webby, and he was a runner-up for Time's 2007 Person of the Year. And oh yeah, Gore was the Democratic nominee for president. Remember in the 2000 presidential election where he was the first presidential candidate to seek a recount and take an election to court? It may be that this incident up there in Oregon is what sparked Gore's separation after 40 years of marriage, and maybe not. But in any case, it's a serious allegation. It's a crime. But Gore has other allegations that have been made against him involving the conflict of interest in his pushing an agenda that has made him what many people call a carbon billionaire.
Right.
Remember, the High Court of Justice in the United Kingdom sided with the court called 9 significant errors in his film, An Inconvenient Truth. And the science, so-called science, behind his agenda is falling apart. And Gore has a personal carbon footprint the size of a small town. And he refuses to debate anyone claiming that the global warming issue is, quote, not a matter of theory or conjecture. Well, everybody knows. The real reason Gore refuses to debate is that he would get his axis kicked, especially if he debated you, Michael. Back to you, my friend.
Thanks for the update, James.
Savage.
The Obama administration has now announced plans to sue the state of Arizona because of their popular immigration law. Joining us now for his views on this is Lynn Woolley from Houston, Texas.
Well, Michael, I find two things very interesting. Number one, that Hillary Rodham Clinton decided to make this announcement in a foreign country, thinking maybe it wouldn't get back to the United States, but she could make all kinds of goodwill on some foreign shore. But of course, the media being what it is today, we knew about it within hours of her having said it. I think it's ridiculous on a lot of standpoints, but you have to take this situation with Hillary Clinton making this announcement in Ecuador and combine it with the video that has gone viral on YouTube about Senator John Kyle announcing that he was in the Oval Office in a one-on-one meeting with Barack Obama. And Obama, according to Kyle, and we don't have video of this, it was in the Oval Office, but according to Kyle, Obama says, we can't go down there and secure the border. If we did that, then you Republicans wouldn't have any incentive to work on comprehensive immigration reform. So it's all a greater plan to get comprehensive immigration reform, which, as you know, means amnesty. And, of course, it means cheap labor for business, and it means cheap votes for Democrats. And those two segments of the political landscape are just never going to let it go. What I think it means, Michael, I think it means more polarization. I think it means no comprehensive immigration reform in a Tea Party era. It's just not going to happen. And probably Obama will end his administration much as Bush did, yearning for comprehensive immigration reform but not having it.
What are they thinking?
Well, I think there is a certain segment of America that does not believe in borders. You've heard of Doctors Without Borders. Well, this is Countries Without Borders. They just want the people to be able to go across a border with impunity. And that might be okay if we had Canada above us and England below us. But unfortunately, we have Mexico below us. And Mexico is a third world country here in North America. Mexico has political corruption to the nth degree. It has the drug war going on. It doesn't have property rights as we have them here. It doesn't have a constitution with a Bill of Rights in it such as we have. And in Mexico, a lot of the way you move on in politics is to assassinate the guy below you or the guy above you whose job you want. It's just not a country that has that much in common with the United States of America. And there's this huge language barrier, and there's another barrier, and that's poverty. Even the poorest people in the United States of America have a better life than the poor people in America. And so the two countries have very, very little in common. And I'll tell you what, when you talk about what people would like to see happen in order to solve this, there is one thing more than anything else, Michael, that separates the people of Mexico from the people of the United States. It's not the poverty. It's not property rights. It's all these things we've talked about are true, but it is language. If the illegal immigrant preparing to sneak into the United States of America and putting together his maps of the Arizona desert and getting his water bottles together and some food and all the things it's going to take to sneak across that desert would spend more time learning the English language so that once here, he or she could assimilate into this society, this issue would not be nearly so politically charged as it is. But that language barrier is almost insurmountable.
You recently wrote about the left's attack on the Tea Parties.
All right, well, I wrote a column about this called Anatomy of a Failed Smear Job, where I accused MSNBC and Chris Matthews of reporting while clueless. Michael, they don't understand us. They don't understand what conservatism is. And conservatism versus liberalism, if you ask me to define those two things and what separates them, I would say we conservatives believe that there are certain undeniable truths given by God, that man should marry woman, woman should marry man, life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, a few undeniable things. Liberals believe nothing is undeniable, nothing is set in stone. You can move everything around. The Constitution is a living, breathing document, so it means whatever Al Gore or whichever liberal de jure wants it to mean at that particular moment. So I don't believe that somebody doing a documentary on the rise of the new right, as Chris Matthews was trying to do, should have been a left-leaning, hardened liberal like Matthews himself. It should have been somebody who was willing to try to understand it. Matthews has no clue what conservatism is all about. He believes the Tea Party is anti-immigrant. He believes it's racist. It took him just a few moments into this documentary to begin referring to us as racist. We are long, long beyond skin color and race. We are into values, core values, people who believe in the vision of this country and people who believe that as the Founding Fathers wrote, as Thomas Jefferson injected into the Declaration of Independence, that we have certain unalienable rights, that among those are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and government should not take those rights away. The basic premise in my mind, Michael, of the Tea Party is that Jeffersonian concept that governments are instituted among men and that they govern with the consent of the governed. And so many of us have withdrawn that consent.
Mr. Softball recently attacked the Tea Party movement using questionable examples of leaders. Why did he do that?
Alex Jones, as a representative of the Tea Parties, look, if you're Matthews and you're MSNBC, I call them micro-socialist NBC, If you're of that ilk and you want to make the Tea Party look as bad as you can, you go find somebody that claims to be a conservative but who has the most out there opinions of anybody in the conservative movement, assuming you believe that Alex Jones is a conservative. You get him on camera. He willingly says the most outrageous things. We are in a period of deep tyranny, Chris. We are in a period of deep tyranny, and there are conspiracies at work here that are going to eliminate 80% of us, maybe 99% of us. And I'm watching this, and I'm thinking, what is he talking about? What he was saying was that there is some government force out there somehow that's going to eliminate, kill, that is, exterminate 99% of the American people. Well, sure. Why wouldn't Matthews put that up as a representative of the Tea Party? Look, Alex is a good guy. He's fine. I've talked to him on the radio in the past, but he does not represent mainstream conservatism. Alex Jones makes his living as a conspiracy monger selling DVDs. He goes on Russian television regularly to disparage America to the Russian people. He hangs out with a guy named Webster Tarpley, who is part of the Lyndon LaRouche movement. These people are not pro-America. And it bothers me that Alex Jones, who claims the mantle of conservatism, hangs out with the people he hangs out with, goes on Russian television, and does some of the things he does. So as a representative of the Tea Party movement, there are many people he could have gotten on the air that were more real than Alex Jones. Sarah Palin's just one example.
Is this true grassroots movement for real?
Michael, I think the Tea Party movement is for real. I think it's here to stay. I heard a lady early in this movement say to liberals and to Democrats and to President Obama, you have awakened the sleeping giant. And I think it's great. I saw an email come across the other day. It was supposed to be from an elderly lady who had written that Obama was going to go down in history as being a great influential president. And the reason that she said that is because of Barack Obama, we have now turned so many liberals out of office. We now have more Republican governors than we had when Barack Obama came in. We're going to have a major turnover in November. We're going to see this country go back to its conservative roots. And that might not have happened if John McCain had become president. With McCain as president, we would have gotten comprehensive immigration reform. It was the number one thing on his schedule until he came up against J.D. Hayworth. But with Barack Obama in office, we are seeing an open liberal, an open socialist, an open Marxist, and there are people in this country that says, that's not what George Washington and Sam Adams and John Adams and Thomas Jefferson and James Madison gave us. They gave us a republic, if we can hold on to it. And Michael, I think the Tea Party and what I call the bottom-up government movement, I think those movements intend to hold on to that republic.
Lynn Woolley, thanks for being on The Savage Nation.
Michael, The Savage Nation's a great radio show. I'm always proud to be on it, and thanks again for inviting me.
I'll be right back.
Savage.
There's another big story that I read over the weekend in the Epoch Times. 33 nations, 17 languages, one newspaper. And I picked it up, I couldn't believe what I read. It's a very fine newspaper. Analysis, media blackout in the Gulf. Turns out that the U.S. government is blocking reporters from access to the site and the cleanup workers in the Gulf of Mexico. Traditional media is not allowed to get in there. Moreover, did you know that your friend at Homeland Security, Big Chin Napolitano, DHS, Big Chin Napolitano, has blocked the airspace over the Gulf spill? Did you know that? You didn't know any of that. You didn't read about that because your local papers aren't reporting it. You cannot drive onto Grand Isle to fill the beaches. They won't let you in there. What's happening is there's a complete media blackout. They're arresting people with cameras. I was told off camera that if they're caught talking to people, they're going to jail. That's local workers. Did you know any of this? I bet you didn't. I bet you didn't know any of that. I bet you didn't read any of that in your local paper. You didn't know that, huh? Well, that's the story. Media blackout in the Gulf of Mexico under good old Barack Hussein Obama and Big Chin Napolitano. So all the news you won't get anywhere else but on The Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's stop for a minute. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of The Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. I want you to listen to how Mr. Rogers of the Senate, that's Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, a trial lawyer himself, began his statement at the Elena Kagan hearing today.
Congratulations. I think it'll be a good couple of days. I hope you somewhat enjoy it. And I think you will. Like everyone else, I'd like to acknowledge the passing of Senator Byrd. He was a worthy ally and a very good opponent when it came to the Senate. All of us are choosing to judge him by his complete career. And history will judge him by his complete career, not one moment in time. And that's probably a good example for all of us to follow when it comes to each other and to nominees.
So he wants her to enjoy the hearing, enjoy it. And not only that, but he praises the KKK member Robert Byrd and says he shouldn't be judged by one moment in his career. This is sickening, almost as disgusting as Mr. Brooklyn Schumer.
Over the last several weeks, we on the Judiciary Committee have had the opportunity to get to know General Kagan. And she has been very forthcoming in every way. I'm confident that the American people will learn, as we have, that you represent the best this country has to offer.
Wrong, Schumer. This country has far better than Elena Kagan, even far better than you.
In fact, we even have this nominee's senior thesis, her graduate thesis, nearly 70 articles she authored for the Daily Princetonian as a college student, almost 200 speeches, and another 200 interviews. The only thing, as far as I can tell, that we don't have is her kindergarten report card.
If we did have her kindergarten report card, it would probably say she got all A's at the Little Red Schoolhouse. And Senator Leaky Leahy couldn't stop talking about the racist Robert Byrd in glowing terms.
No senator came to care more about the Constitution or to be a more effective defender of our constitutional government than the senior senator from West Virginia. In many ways, he was the keeper of the Senate flame, the fiercest defender of the Senate's constitutional role and prerogatives. I don't know how many times we saw Senator Byrd hold up the copy of the Constitution. The difference between him holding it up and any one of us holding it up, he could put it back in his pocket and recite it verbatim.
I guess he could probably recite the Protocols of the Learned Elders of Zion verbatim as well.
He was a self-educated man. He learned much throughout his life. He had much to teach us all. Senator Byrd was such an extraordinary man of merit and grit and determination, who loved his family, who drew strength from his deep faith, who took it to heart his oath to support and defend the Constitution. The arc of his career in public service is an inspiration to all.
An inspiration to the future racists of America. And here's the best America has to offer, Elena Kagan.
My grandparents came to this country in search of a freer and better life for themselves and their families. They wanted to escape bigotry and oppression, to worship as they pleased, and work as hard as they were able. They found in this country, and they passed on to their children and their children's children, the blessings of liberty. Those blessings are rooted in this country's Constitution and its historic commitment to the rule of law.
And now, listen to this. Here's the woman who's accused Al Corleone of making sexual advances towards her during a massage.
I knocked on the door. Al Gore opened the door, and I introduced myself, saying, "Hello, I'm your massage therapist. How shall I call you?" He answered, "Call me Al," with a big smile, as he stretched out his arms to wrap me into an embrace as a greeting in the inner entryway of the room as I stepped inside. He was wearing a long-sleeved dress shirt. It was a medium bright blue, I think, open at the collar, and dark pants, which were slacks, I think. The hug went on a bit long, and I was taken just a bit aback by it. If it weren't Al Gore, I would have seriously been questioning the situation right there, because a hug from an unknown male client before the session is a bit odd and unprofessional by typical LMT business standards.
Well, I guess the climate data wasn't all that Gore wanted massaged. MichaelSavage.com, big news story. Supreme Court affirms individual gun rights in all states. Read all about it. Yep. Meet the jokers in charge of interviewing Kagan. You're not going to believe them. A cast of graybeards, rising stars, and a lame duck once in charge. You're not going to believe this list. Now, they've given Kagan pearls, makeup, and fake earrings. I think there's an adage about you can put pearls on a... Well, let's let it go at that. But she's still a... You know what? I want you to take a note on my website. You can get a Savage ringtone. I didn't even know it was up there. You know that's funny, Beowulf, because people can now be standing in a mall, and if their phone rings, it wouldn't go ring, ring. It would say Lexus Liberals or Corned Beef Commies.
We'll start hearing it all over across America now.
Wouldn't that be funny if a million people played Lexus Liberals or Corned Beef Commies on their phone every time it rang? That would go off somewhere. That would be funny.
Coming to a mall across America soon near you.
Supreme Court to weigh in on immigration law in Arizona. Obamacare net effect, red tape, and rising premiums. North Korea declares plans to bolster its nuclear arsenal. We do nothing. Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time, throws threats and petulant fit to punish the West, and we do nothing. Cop acquitted in beating of Iraq veteran. You don't want to watch that video. I got sick watching it. A housing cop beat a prone, shackled, and unarmed Iraq war veteran, both black men, by the way, beat him mercilessly with a baton in the lobby of a building because he wouldn't produce ID. This poor guy didn't even do anything wrong. And this evil cop was acquitted in the beating of the Iraq veteran. You got to watch this and see what the injustice is in New York City. Again, read the media blackout in the Gulf of Mexico. Oh, don't miss this one. Obama's old pastor is back, still ranting against Jews and whites. Oh, yeah. All of this on MichaelSavage.com. Let's have a little rock and roll for the minute on the Savage Nation. Oh, there's so much more. The California NAACP backs legalizing marijuana. Now, what does legalizing marijuana have to do with the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People? Are they arguing that marijuana will advance colored people? Well, it's all on MichaelSavage.com. You check it out. So what I really care for, and then this suddenly. Go to MichaelSavage.com and sign the petition, will you please? Savage.